Welcome to the Twiniversity Podcast, a show created exclusively for you guys, parents of twins. I'm your host, Natalie Diaz. Yes, I am a mom of twins. I'm also the founder of Twiniversity and the author of What to Do When You're Having To. Now, our goal here at Twiniversity is to make sure that you always feel connected, you laugh at the little things, and we get to teach you a few tricks along the way. And I'm hoping that's what this podcast is about to do. Now, shall we get this party started? Welcome to Twiniversity. Picture this, okay? You're laying in bed on a cold Sunday morning. Your feet are all toasty under those blankets, and you open your eyes to a beautiful ray of sunshine that's peeking through the curtains, shining directly on your face. And then you hear the twinnies start to awaken. Now, you knew they were gonna wake up because they are like clockwork. They get up every day at this time for a bottle. But you know what you get today? You get an extra few minutes of that snuggling experience because you have the Baby Brezza Formula Pro Advance with Wi-Fi. So all you have to do is tuck your hand outside of those blankets, grab your phone, open the app, and you're already preparing the bottle right there from the comfort of your super warm bed. And that's actually just one of the amazing things that Baby Brezza has to offer us. And you would truthfully think that everything they made was just with twin parents in mind. From their formula prep to their one-step sterilizer to their baby food makers. Honestly, it's mind-blowing the great stuff that they have. So to find out more about their latest innovations or to learn more about the things I just told you about because you wanna have a super snuggly Sunday morning, head on over to babybrezza.com.
Lauren Oak.
Natalie Diaz.
That's it. That's who we are, guys. But I am Natalie Diaz and she's Lauren Oak. Don't get confused. Guys, I'm Nat from Twiniversity. That is Lauren Oak. She is the resident awesomeness here at Twiniversity. A very, 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 very dear friend. Is that enough varies?
No, four more, please.
You definitely would be in like my bestie inner circle.
Yes, absolutely. I feel the same way.
So it's just, so guys, for the record, Lauren and I, while we are friends, like she is my go-to. You've always been my go-to.
Aw, you too.
Well, we just have that personality. We're like perpetual maternal peoples. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've had such good times with you. I think about remember when we were in, guys, we went to Turks and Caicos. I could still remember like talking about like your parents in like our bathrobes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, on the balcony.
That was so nice.
That was so nice. I think we both took baths.
Oh, so good. I have a picture of my feet in that bathtub.
I have a picture of myself in the bathrobe. You took a picture of me and I was like in the nice bathrobe on the balcony.
It was such like a moment and it really is like one of my favorite memories of us together.
Absolutely.
I'm so lucky to have you in my universe. And I think that like, not only do I depend on you because you're a twin mom. And for the record, guys, we weren't on vacation in Turks and Caicos.
No,
I
had to go very hard.
I had to go for work. Sorry. I was speaking at a beaches conference. Was it about podcasting? No, I don't think so.
Because it was like a social media, like mom.
Like summit or something. It was awesome. Seriously. So yeah, guys, hit me up if you need me to speak at any conferences, even internationally.
And she needs a sidekick.
I always ask for a plus one and it's never my husband. I know that's horrible, but I will go on vacation with him other places. I just know that when it's work, that sometimes he gets weird. He's like, what time you're going to come back? But if you go with other mom friends, mm-hmm. and everybody knows exactly what I do. And you are a literal support person. And you're like, you got to be down there. And no, that doesn't look good. And your dress is in the back of your underwear. And like,
let me refresh that beverage.
Yes. Oh, it's the best. Friends are the best. So we're talking about not friendship today. We're actually going to meet Christina and we're really talking about solids. And I know you're like, what does this have to do with what Lauren and I are talking about? But one of the titles here at Twiniversity for Lauren is she is the snack maven.
Yes.
And so ever literally, if you, Lauren is the person who would have like purse candy. Like if you're like going someplace and you're hungry, there's always a meal in her purse. Doesn't matter.
Something.
Yeah. Like something here, to tie you over.
Yes. Until we can get to a location. My biggest fear is that I'll be hungry somewhere.
But for the record, we both live in New York. So it's not like we could be anywhere where food, that isn't walkable to us. We don't live in the woods. We don't like, it's so funny.
We don't have to forage our own.
Nope. Fruit. We really don't. And so when I think about snacking, I always think about Lauren. And so today, Christina, who literally is like the queen of starting solids. So she has, she's a twin mom, and she started a class called Real Food Littles is her website. And she talks about baby led weaning.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful. Now you've heard this term, right? It's like all the rage.
Yes.
So do you know what it actually is?
Sort of.
That's what I mean. Like, I think that everybody is like, oh, should we do baby-led weaning? So what baby-led weaning is, instead of starting with spoons and like spoon feeding your baby, you start with mushy things. So anything that's squishable, and that the babies pick it up and they put it in their own mouth and they basically make the puree with their gums.
Yep.
And so this is, there's benefits of baby-led weaning because, number one, it's really good fine motor for them to pick up the food. It is also really good at letting them kind of like moderate how much they want to eat and what they want to eat.
Yep.
And it's also a really good way to get, it's an easier transition when they are feeding themselves to then, you know, have them sit down with a plate.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of benefits. And then I could say a big benefit to 20s is that often, I know we all do it. I don't even care. And if anybody out there doesn't do this, I don't want to call you a liar to your face, but most of us who like spoon feed solids usually use the same spoon.
Oh yeah.
Did you say this is my bowl for, you know, for Abigail? Did you do that? Or ever you were just like one bowl, one spoon?
One bowl and like you and you and you. And when twin moms ask me, can I do that? I'm like, yes, absolutely. So, you know, it's really up to them. So it makes your life easier. Less is more.
It really is. And it's so funny that now the universe is kind of shifting from that spoon feeding and going back to cave times. And not only is it that the babies are going to feed themselves and like learn their own things, but it's strongly encouraged that you eat with your children.
Yes.
And so this, of course, is beneficial because A, there's only one dinner time, right? Everybody has dinner time at the same time.
Yeah.
B, it really is a very social time and you get to talk to each other and food is social. But when you're spoon feeding, often there is no like breaks between. You're just like feed, 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 feed. Like, let's get it done. Yeah. But if you're all feeding yourself, there is more pauses. There's more breaks. There's more time for literally anything you want to talk about. Even if you and your partner are going to have a conversation while your 20s are sitting there eating, you know, smushy carrots.
Yeah.
Then there's also the whole benefit of the babies watch what you eat. And then in return, they kind of know what's safe.
Yeah.
So like she was telling us, like Christina was saying that like in cave person times, by you eating chicken, the babies know that chicken is safe, really in like the primal sense of our brain. And then they will have a possibility of having even a more diverse palate.
Okay.
So I love this whole concept of this. And I love that we have this really great conversation with Christina. And so, like I said, she's the Real Food Littles. We're going to put all the links below and everything like that. But with her being a twin mom, it was so great having that conversation of like, what do? Troubleshooting, you know, how do we deal with this? But I love that she's like, start in a high chair. And she really was talking about the 90-90, like that you're basically, your baby's back needs to be up straight. And then their knees also need to be straight. So ideally, they would be in a 90 degree at their hips and then a 90 degree at their knees. And this is kind of the best positioning for eating, because if they're even a little bit tipped back, then it could potentially be a choking issue.
Ah, interesting.
So I, of course, was like super neurotic about choking. Were you like super crazy about like the kids choking? Well, because you knew that Rebecca lived. So Lauren has four daughters. So her twins were in the middle of her daughter's sandwich. So you already knew that she was going to live.
Yep.
I was really freaking out, man. Plus, like Johnny, when he was younger, he had that like a significant sensory issue. So he would like stuff everything in his mouth.
Yes.
So he would have like, I have this one picture where he has like a giant, like 2 graham crackers in his cheeks. I'm going to send it to you after this, Lauren, and maybe I'll post it because it's one of my favorite pictures. And I didn't know that that was a sensory thing. That like at the time, I just thought that like, oh, look at my little Italian boy. Oh, he stuffs all the food in his mouth. I love him so much. Right. So for me, I was like, this is just, I was going to use a very crude term of what I would call him, but I won't. But email me at community@twiniversity.com if you want to know what I was going to call him. But I remember not knowing that that was like a sensory thing that he had. Yeah. He didn't feel the food in his cheeks until they were super full.
Oh.
But I now, in hindsight, would love the opportunity to try baby-led weaning. And I like that in 50 years when my kids have babies, then I could do that. I could try this with them because I think it's so smart. Everybody did baby-led weaning. It's honestly like, who the heck is using baby food anymore?
I would say the last 5 years, it's become very, very common.
Because it was always common in other countries. Mm-hmm. For what, I don't know what happened here, but we're like purees and pouches and all that. And Christina's like, no. So that's what we're talking about today. And I know you're going to love this conversation because it's something that we didn't get to do and we're going to have a little bit of mom envy. Are you ready to meet Christina?
Yes.
All right, guys, here is Christina Scott. Hi, Christina. Thank you for playing with us today.
Hi. Thanks, Natalie. It's great to be here.
Yay. Now, I'm stoked about today's topic because it seems that this is all the rage, right? Everybody's talking about baby-led weaning. And I believe actually we might have discussed it previously on the podcast. I have to check. But I know that the system of feeding our kids is viewed very differently in today's day and age than it even was about 20 years ago. So where baby-led weaning has always been there, it may not have had like the air quotes like title of baby-led weaning. Like there were still families that were doing that. However, now it seems to be that this is the way everybody is kind of working things with their children. But I shouldn't say everybody, right? There's still plenty of people that are going that traditional kind of 1970s to 90s route. But now we're smart enough to realize that there's a better way to make sure that our babies are eating whole foods and appropriately and getting, you know, the appropriate nutrients and minerals that they need to get to grow, to be healthy and strong instead of worrying as much about like sticking to just like plain old oatmeal and applesauce. So in your journey with your dudes that are now 3 and are so freaking cute, which by the way, I totally was stalking your website, Real Food Littles, which is the cutest, and I love a good messy baby. But how did you determine that this is what you were going to do with your kids?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my background is as like a health focused personal chef, and I have a nutrition background as well. So I had worked before having kids. I had worked with a lot of different families, with little ones, and there was just this recurring pattern of the struggles that they would have. And basically they would call me because they couldn't all eat the same thing for dinner. And it had gotten really overwhelming generally for the mom, whether the mom worked or stayed home, like often cooking falls on the mom's shoulders and she just had enough of it. Yeah. And I would always make progress with these families. If you have picky eater kids and you have some allergies in there and that mom wants to eat healthy and dad wants a steak and, you know, nobody could agree on what to have. So they would just eat out all the time. So that people would have those options. And it just got really unmanageable. And I sort of was interested in, well, if we trace this back to to the beginning, how do you get to a place with a kid that will only eat chicken nuggets and mac and cheese? Like, how do you get from a baby that will eat pretty much anything, you know, in the early days mm-hmm. to this, you know, this real struggle at the dinner table? And that's what kind of started my interest in it, and noticing the families that did baby-led weaning and the families that fed their babies the foods that I was cooking for them, the sort of like healthy family meals, had such a better outcome than the families who were spoon feeding and feeding like separate, really bland food to their little ones in sort of like a very controlling manner and whatnot. It was just like such a different trajectory that these families and kids were on. And that really focused my interest in this and showed me how important it is to start, like, to set the foundation mm-hmm. when you start solids. And that's where their whole relationship with food starts and the foods they like. So then there was quite a bit of time before I could actually test it on my own kids, because we had a very long infertility loss IVF journey, which I'm sure a lot of twin parents, not all for sure, but some can relate to. So by the time our twins did come along, I knew that these would probably be my only two children, given how hard our journey was. So mm-hmm. I didn't have the ability to sort of, you know, wing it with the first kid and refine it for the second one. I really wanted to make sure that we got this right for, you know, the first time round. So I did a ton of research, and I just knew that, particularly having twins, that baby-led weaning was really the way to go. Mm-hmm. And then what I found is that it was a lot more challenging than I thought. You know, even with like all this cooking experience and nutrition experience, the actual in the trenches, what do I make for dinner that the babies can have too, was harder than I anticipated. And that's kind of what started my course and this whole thing of like, there has to be a way to make this easier.
So I love that you had the perspective of having previous clients that did these introductions, and now you have kind of this life experience of doing this with your own 20s and finding that it was a little bit more challenging. And you specifically said that it was hard to come up with like what you were going to cook, even though you knew that they were going to eat. But even before then, I kind of want to break down what baby-led weaning is, if we can, and the differences between like baby-led weaning and what parents traditionally had done with just straight up spoon feeding.
Yeah, absolutely. So baby-led weaning as a term was coined by a nurse in the UK called Jill Rapley. So she kind of gave this method a name. And what it is starting babies on food that they can pick up and self-feed right from the beginning of introducing solids. So that is, you don't want to start it before around 6 months or mm-hmm. 6 months adjusted for people who have preemies. And then some people choose to start it a little bit later, but in the most traditional, in the most, you know, basic sense, that's what it is. And it also can include babies feeding themselves with a spoon too. Mm-hmm. So like scooping yogurt and feeding themselves. So it's really a focus on the baby self-feeding as opposed to the parent feeding the baby and getting introduction to those different textures and the beginnings of like a chewing motion right from the get-go. And then in contrast, traditional weaning or spoon feeding is generally with purees, where the parent is feeding the baby. And it sort of often is starting with really thin purees, like stage one, stage two, stage three, mm-hmm. moving through these kind of stages of lumpiness, which are really just created by baby food companies. Honestly, that's something that not everyone is aware of. It was more just a way to keep babies on them longer so that baby parents will keep buying their products. So that really is a marketing thing, not sort of a developmental necessity per se. But that has been the way that the predominant way that we've fed babies for decades mm-hmm. now, which is why it can be hard for some parents to make this switch to something that can feel very foreign, but is actually really more of a return to how we fed babies generations ago before Gerber and, you know, these baby food companies were on the scene. So it's interesting. It's almost like we've come a big full circle mm-hmm. back.
Well, I think one of the biggest reasons or apprehensions that new parents have is that they're really afraid that their kids are going to choke.
Yes, absolutely.
So how do we balance that fear of them stuffing their mouths with whatever it is and, you know, trusting that they know what they're doing as tiny little humans, right? Because we would assume that cave people did not have, you know, pureed baby foods. They might have had mushier pieces, right? But if we really
they were lacking a Vitamix. Circle,
yes, right? So if we really go full circle, then we look that, you know, I'm sure even that like my grandmother, like that she didn't feed her kids puree. They just ate what she ate and that was just that. And they were fine. But how do we get over this whole babies need purees because they could swallow it better? And like, there's that whole thing, like, I'm afraid that if I let the babies take control, they're going to choke and I'm going to have to do, you know, the Heimlich maneuver on six month olds. So how does that work? Or how do you talk to parents so that they don't worry about that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is parent education around both actual choking risk and perceived choking risk. So there's sometimes things that we think sound really dangerous, but are actually safe. A good example of that would be like a rib bone with a little bit of meat on it. That sounds like it would definitely choke a baby, but it's one of the safest things you can give them because a piece can't break off. It's just like a teether versus something that's an actual risk, like really big peas for a 6 month old would actually be much higher risk because it's round, it's small. They're not quite ready for pieces that small yet. So that's something that we think, oh, give babies a piece. Like, of course, that's fine. But that would be more of a risk. And so parents do need to be educated in this, both in terms of how to mitigate the risk with food and safety there, and then also being up to speed on infant CPR so that if, God forbid, there is a choking incident, that you know as a parent that you know exactly what to do. But the challenge there is choking is just a very rare kind of life-threatening emergency that requires, you know, immediate attention. But people often will use the word choking when what they really mean is gagging, which all babies will do as they're learning to eat finger food. And that's whether somebody does baby-led weaning at 6 months or whether they kind of kick the can down the road and don't start finger food until 9 or 10 months or so. Babies will pretty much always gag when they're learning how to eat. And it's as normal as a baby stumbling when they're learning how to walk. You know, it's just part of the process. So often there's this mismatch where parents think that babies just like start eating and can do it really well right away. And it's such an agonizingly slow process with a lot of learning. And sometimes, you know, the gagging is just part of the process. And sort of when parents understand that and expect it and know how to stay calm through it and coach their babies through it, then they don't have that anxiety or overreact and actually create a problem where there isn't one.
All right. Yes, I would have definitely created the problem. My anxiety would have. So I was a total puree person. I think I would still be feeding them purees to this day if it wasn't for my husband. So, you know, it's so funny. There's different cultures that have such different like views on choking. For some weird reason, Christina, which is so crazy, like my mom is like super afraid of choking. And she always felt that she had like a tiny trachea. And I remember like going to church as a little girl and there's a Saint Blaise. Have you ever heard of him? Which they do this blessing of the throats. Christina, I can't, I'm not even kidding you when I tell you. Wow. I've paid enough for therapy through my life. But yeah, we used to like go get our throat blessed like every year as a child because of this whole big choking thing, whatever. Yeah, we're a special crew here in on Mulberry Street in New York City. So with that, I don't think I would have ever tried baby-led weaning because I would have been paranoid and my mother would have had a nervous breakdown. Mm-hmm. But I totally now sitting in the seat that I do with Twiniversity and have had exposure to wonderful practitioners like yourself and other people that I've seen in baby shows throughout the country. I really do feel that this is I'm not saying the reason, maybe why Americans in general overeat, but perhaps if we learned to take control of what we were putting in our mouth as at a very young age, instead of having to feel that we always had to like clean our plates and we had to do these things. It's mm-hmm. so interesting that even at 6 months, you basically are giving, you're empowering your children to discover that they can make these choices for themselves. And ultimately that, I think, and I want to know how you feel about that, but I think that if kids feel empowered and it's actually going to seep into other parts of their life. So while we may just see this as like the intro to feeding, this is actually creating a good standard of how to take care of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you hit on some really great points there, where we actually do have research that babies that start solids with baby-led weaning have a better ability to regulate their hunger cues. And that's mm-hmm. such an important thing for little ones to learn, because if you think about it as adults, what the goal is for all of us is to eat when we're hungry, to stop when we're full, and to sort of enjoy a wide variety of healthy foods. But there are so many people that struggle with that,
yeah,
and struggle with, overeating is more common, but undereating or so many issues around food. And if we can empower babies right from the start that you're in charge of what you eat, and when you're yeah. hungry, you can have more. And if you don't feel like eating this meal, I'm not going to force you to have 3 bites. You're in charge of how your belly feels, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that that's just such a gift to give children, to be able to self-regulate that way and to create that trust of, like, I trust you that you're in charge of how your body feels.
Yeah.
And to your point, I do think that that can have sort of a ripple effect in other, you know, ways as kids are getting older and more independent, of sort of equipping them with those tools to trust their bodies.
Now, take off your practitioner hat and throw on your twin mom hat here for a second.
Yeah. Okay. I wear that hat a lot.
Right. You have no choice. You have to survive yet another day. So when your dudes were starting this process and they were making the decisions for themselves on how much they wanted to eat, whether you want to talk about 6 months or now, as many twin parents are pretty regulated when it comes to what time meal time is.
Mm-hmm.
How does baby-led weaning affect how much they're taking in, so that it doesn't go kind of off the rails schedule wise, right? Because if I'm saying, here, this is what's on your dish, eat it, and they're like, I don't feel like eating anything, we don't want to shove food in their face because that's in total opposition of baby-led weaning. However, they do need to eat to get through the next 4 hours or so. Mm-hmm. How do you balance that as a twin parent? Even if one kid didn't feel right, because we have that whole second mystery baby that showed up, how do we keep it so that everybody, we could kind of still stay on our schedule, make sure the kids are nourished, but still have them empowered?
Yeah. So you can definitely stick to, you could like set your watch to our feeding schedule, like from bottles all the way through. So I think it's actually pretty easy to keep mm-hmm. the schedule. I think the challenge, and everyone can relate to this, is between 6 and 12 months or even 18 months, there's so many changes. Like, you drop a nap, you're dropping mm-hmm. a bottle. If you're bottle feeding, like, the schedule can change. Like, they go through these developmental phases pretty quickly. So like, just when you're getting one schedule down, it's like time to drop a bottle or drop a nap, and then everything shifts. But you definitely can shift both kids and keep them on the same schedule, because, you know, from 6 to 12 months, breast milk or formula is still their primary source of nutrition. So you're kind of anchored by your milk mm-hmm. feeding schedule, and then you're working your solid feed schedule into that. And both of those can be scheduled if you're like most twin parents, and that is easier to kind of like schedule both kids to be eating at the same time. And you're doing that frequently enough that, let's say they have, an off milk feed, or they decide mm-hmm. that they're going to have nothing for lunch, you got another bottle or breastfeed session or another meal coming pretty soon. And so it's a short enough time that we don't need to worry about them like starving in an hour and a half, you know?
Yeah.
And there are always, you know, off days, you know, where you get off kilter or whatever. But I do think that I would advise and think it's really manageable to just like keep the schedule. And if one has a big meal and one has a smaller meal, then they're probably going to flip flop at mm-hmm. the next one. And you just kind of like keep with the schedule and just roll with some feedings being bigger and some being smaller, and that knowing that that's normal.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I think that it's so important to know that basically you have 6 months for them to work this out. Because yeah. since their liquids are their primary source of nutrition, they have this 6 month learning process to figure out how to chew, and you could worry less about mm-hmm. the gagging and all that. Now, if I know that it's not only the foods that are part of the baby led weaning process, I also, you could also stop me if I'm wrong, but it's also like introducing a straw sooner and the positioning of the baby so that they have the best opportunity to chew and put foods in their mouth and not drop stuff. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the stuff that you need for baby-led weaning, what are some of the tools that you think that we need to have in our arsenal and like ready to roll when we want to start this process?
Yeah. The biggest consideration by far is the high chair that you choose. So I do think that it's worthwhile to do your research there and not just like pop on Amazon and like buy the first one you see. The most important thing is to be able to position your baby in it's called a 90-90 position, so that they're 90 degrees at their back, sitting up nice and straight, 90 degrees at their hip, and then 90 degrees at their knee. So what we're trying to avoid is any kind of recline or slumped back position. Mm-hmm. That getting them in that really safe upright position is a huge part of them eating safely and having kind of a straight line from the mouth to down to the hips and the stomach. So a high chair that has an adjustable footrest is a really worthwhile feature to have the feet be supported. And then, sometimes there's things parents can do like with a towel behind the back to bring them forward, but the positioning is really, really key. And truthfully, some of the more high-end ones enabled you to get in that position more easily. Mm-hmm. But there's also a high chair from IKEA where you can get an aftermarket footrest. That's a really great option for people. So you don't have to spend a lot of money, but getting that position is really key. And then in terms of other stuff, you don't need that much with baby led weaning. Honestly, some people prefer to put food straight on a high chair tray. For us, we pulled our babies right up to the table from the start, which I really liked. Mm-hmm. So we did have a plate, like a suction plate just for them. And then the two other things that are great to have are an open cup and a straw cup to work okay. on those skills sort of from between starting those between 6 and 9 months for babies to start learning how to drink out of an open cup and a straw cup.
So there's a lot of things that are changing here. And so my concern is this too much change, right? Do we introduce a straw cup or an open cup when we're starting the baby-led weaning? Do we start with the foods? Do we always offer beverages? Because I know that like one of the companies, Easy Peasy, right? They sell this wonderful mm-hmm. little kit that sticks to the table. It's got a straw cup. It's got like a little compartmental dish that's there, which is fantastic. But I remember that when I heard her speaking from Dawn from the company, she was like, this is what, you have this little cup and then the cup could use a straw or not. But I don't actually remember if she ever said we start this all at once. So what is like the layers of baby-led weaning introduction with cups and straws and food, and where do we start?
Yeah. There are some different schools of thought on this. Like if you add, this is sort of like feeding therapists, this is kind of like their specialty. Mm-hmm. And there are some different opinions. But I think it can feel overwhelming for everyone to have like the first meal is like food and an open cup. And it's just mm-hmm. like a lot going on. So for parents who want to sort of go in stages here. I would start with just the food first, and kind of offer that. And then you can do an open cup first. That usually takes a little bit longer to get the hang of, and then the straw cup. So it's fine to go in stages like that. You don't have to wait until they've perfectly mastered open cup drinking before going on to straw cup drinking, because that is can be a very slow process of them getting to the point where they are totally independent with that. But you certainly can go kind of one at a time if it feels like a little overwhelming for everyone.
So the moral of the story is we're throwing out all sippy cups.
Yes. Yeah. So speech language pathologists, that's like their kind of specialty. And the motion of a sippy cup is very similar to the sucking motion that they've already really, really ingrained as a baby. Like they've got that down. So it's really, we want them to learn these other mouth motions that are quite different. The lip closure needed for open cup drinking and straw cup drinking. Mm-hmm. And there's similar mouth motions that little ones need to learn for speech. So that, I think that is a big part of helping them make that transition. And then another benefit too is, it's sort of problematic when toddlers are just like constantly have a sippy cup of milk with them, and end up just drinking. They can just drink so much volume out of a sippy cup, more milk than we want them to be drinking. So having it in an open cup or a straw cup also slows them down a little bit so that we can make sure they're having kind of like an appropriate amount of milk and not just guzzling it down.
I'm fascinated by this whole straw like cup situation because as a mom of a kid who had a significant amount of speech therapy, we were always advised not to use sippy cups. So we had always used straw cups, and now it's like mainstream. So before, like, it would be like, if your kid, like if you went to the playground and you saw a kid drinking out of a straw cup, you're like, oh yeah, he's probably in speech too. And you could make a friend. And now it's definitely the preferred method. And I'm noticing that there's less and less sippy cups even sold, that they are going more towards straws, and companies are coming up with different little widgets that will always angle towards the fluid at the bottom of a cup if it's going to be a straw cup, because that's a challenge too, right? How do you get that little bit left at the bottom if you have a straw? Right. It takes kids a minute. And of course, parents know we don't want you guys to waste anything. So there are tools that are out there. Now, as far as plates go, you said that you put it, you, when you put the food, you said you brought them right up to the table, but when you put food on the table, was it in a dish or was it just on a placemat?
Yeah, we started with the, easy peasy suction plates. And then went to an undivided plate once their hand motion, once they got better fine motor skills and were able to eat a little bit more proficiently. So the advantage of something like a suction plate or like an easy peasy divided type plate is it can help them pick up the food in the early days. So I do think that's like one advantage of that type of plate over just putting it straight on a high chair tray. It helps, they can kind of like drive the food up against the edge and hold it with their whole palm of their hand. But I don't think that it's prudent to stay on those divided plates indefinitely, because then you can get into issues where babies don't want their food. Now toddlers don't want their food touching. That's like one of the most common low hanging fruit things with picky eaters. Like that can be super frustrating as a parent, right? When they need, like, they can't, you need like 2 inches of spaces between each piece of food. So I would view those suction kind of divided plates as a short term thing for the early days. And then moving to a regular kind of just smaller version of our plates, you know, sooner rather than later to get them used to that.
Okay. So I'm going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, I really want to talk about like which foods we should start with. So sit right there. We'll be right back.
Sure.
If you think this podcast isn't the worst. We got great news for you. There's actually a lot more to Twiniversity than what you're listening to right now. We have classes for expectant twin families. We have classes for breastfeeding twin families. We have a peer-to-peer mentorship program. We have the book, What to Do When You're Having To. We have a thriving social network, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, wherever you want to hang out, we will meet you there. So to get kind of a fuller picture of all that Twiniversity has to offer you, head on over to twiniversity.com and check out the latest information that we think you need to know today.
All right, we're back. I know there was the longest break and you're like, I miss Nat and Christina.
We miss you too.
So I want to dig in. Where do we start? What foods do we start, right? Traditionally, it would be like, okay, we're going to do oatmeal and banana. And then after banana, we're going to go to, you know, avocado. When it comes to baby-led weaning, do we still kind of stay traditionally with more of the mushy typed foods, but in bigger chunks? Is there like start here and end up at, you know, chicken thighs? Like what's the, where do we begin this?
The key is that the food needs to be, they call it the squish test, like squishable between two fingers. So if a baby can squish, if you can squish it between two fingers, mm-hmm. then a baby's gums are strong enough to squish it as well. Cause you know, most babies don't have teeth or maybe just have one or two front teeth or something by the time they're starting solids. But in terms of what the first food is, I think parents can put so much pressure on themselves of like finding the perfect first food and the perfect first little meal. Mm-hmm. And I would just like release yourself of that pressure and think more instead of first food, think of first foods, plural. Like what sort of foods are we going to feed over the course of the first month? And it really can be as simple as, like what you are cooking for the rest of your family that week. You know, if you're doing a baked sweet potato, that's a really easy thing where you just give them a big strip of the sweet potato, which is super soft. Avocado is a really common, there's no cook there. Avocado mm-hmm. is a really common one. If you want just a safe, low pressure food, that's like a really popular one. But it really doesn't have to be, you know, there's no prescribed path through this. So it's really just coming up with like little bits of, well, what am I already going to cook this week that is easy to have it be baby safe? So I think it's easy. It's really easy to overcomplicate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Overcomplicate it definitely is. It. Yeah.
And what about the, you know, we still have to wait X amount of days for allergens and stuff like that. How does that work in baby-led weaning? Do you worry about that less and introduce two foods at a time? Like, what are we, like, I know that if they were very strict about make sure that, you know, you introduce one food at a time. So if they have an allergy to it, we know that there's not going to be an issue. Where does that fall into this?
Yeah, that's a great point. So what we know through the research, and this is newer research in the past, I don't know, like 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. Is that the early introduction and early and often with the allergenic foods, there's sort of 9 top allergenic foods that is protective against food allergies down the road. So that's like a total 180 from what it mm-hmm. used to be. I'm sure when you were weaning your kids, where you wouldn't even dream of introducing peanut before a year. And that actually, we have really solid evidence that that made allergies worse. Mm-hmm. So they think it's sort of getting the immune system used to these proteins at an earlier age helps the immune system accept them. So that's the thing to know with allergens. But the chance of a baby having a food allergy that is outside of those top 9 foods is possible, of course, but like shockingly low. So we don't have to really worry about going one at a time for those other non-allergenic foods. This is something where some guidelines are having to catch up to where this research is. So you may read, you know, there are some differences of opinion, but it's definitely trending towards this is what we know about allergies, and we have to be, we have to weigh being really, really cautious and mm-hmm. doing sweet potato for 3 days before we go on to banana, with the fact that if you do that, you're not going to get through that many foods before they're a year. You just can't. Never mind the fact that it's really inconvenient to like perfectly like track all this stuff. You can't feed the baby what you're eating, because if you're eating something that has 10 ingredients in it, they're not going to get there until they're like an 11 mm-hmm. month old. It's just really unrealistic. And so we have to weigh the unbelievably low chance of like a sweet potato allergy with the fact that we know that the more foods and flavors and textures they have when they're young, the better they will eat going forward. So that's kind of like what you're weighing there. And of course, there's always, you know, exceptions on the edge of the bell curve, where if it's a family history of severe food allergies mm-hmm. and eczema and all these other high risk factors, then my recommendation would be like start working with an allergist and kind of get advice on your personal situation right from the beginning, you know, because there can be some nuances there. But for the vast majority of babies, we don't have to really stress about going one at a time for those non-allergenic foods.
Things are so much better. It really is. And even like spices and things like that. Like if you really try to introduce all of the spices that you may use, I mean, we use spicy foods. Like I have to be honest, we were, you know, for the first few months, I think I very much bought into the doing exactly like everything by the book. And I would say maybe by like 9 months, 10 months, I was like, I'm done with this. Like you're just right. eating what we're eating and welcome. Here's, right. you're going to love garlic. We're heavy on the garlic in our house. I hope you enjoy it. So I, going back to the introducing, specifically introducing allergens, and yes, it was very much advised that we stay away from certain things, but traditionally that's not what we do in my culture, right? So mm-hmm. there's a lot of things that we, I'm not going to say that I was in like direct opposition of, but I did, we did introduce peanut butter and we did introduce things and eggs and mm-hmm. all these other things that everybody was like very cautious of. But mm-hmm. to me, I know that we have no food allergies in our yeah. family. And I was like, I would like to not start now. So could we just like, I don't want this to be the first time that this had happened. And I have friends still that have kids that have like anaphylactic level reactions yeah. to mm-hmm. tree nuts. And yes. that is some poop to deal with. Like even just
absolutely.
There's like peanut free classrooms when my kids were little. And I'm mm-hmm. like, what changed exactly? Right. So like, if you look historically, like my mother didn't have peanut free classrooms when she was there. Like how all of a sudden did my kids, I didn't even like, you had like maybe one or two kids in your class growing up that had an allergy. And now like everybody seems to have an allergy. So I mm-hmm. love that there, all this research is showing that yes, please introduce allergens in mm-hmm. A very calculated manner instead yeah. of just being like, let's give them eggs, peanut butter, tree nuts, and soy the same day. Like, let's give them, yeah. right? So you go yeah. slow and steady.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go slow and steady to win that race, but there's still families that are not going to believe that. So
yes,
is this, does the American Academy of Pediatrics like now recognize that this is a thing and we should be introducing allergens, or is it still kind of an underground parenting movement?
No, this is introducing allergens early is not underground. I would say if a pediatrician right now is telling somebody to wait until after a year for peanut, then that would really raise some questions. This is like very, very well established. And I think it was something, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I want to say it was like like 85% mm-hmm. reduction in the incidence yeah. of peanut allergies with this early, you know, early and often introduction. It's really, it's like a night and day difference in the research. I think it is definitely a huge change from what it used to be, but pretty mainstream now. And to yeah. the point that now we have all these companies popping up that have like these powders for mm-hmm. allergen introduction, where they're like all mixed, separated out and mixed together. And, you know, just, you know, nobody, you don't need that to do this, but it just sort of to show that this is really the wave of doing it earlier now.
The only reason why I really bring that up is because I know that pediatricians, although they want to spend a lot of time with us, when you go for a twin visit, sometimes things fall through the cracks.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, you hope that that discussion on introductions of solids is a substantial discussion so that parents learn, you know, what appropriately to do with them, especially if the doctor knows the family's history, right? You mm-hmm. want that. But I know that with us, if often we go to the doctor at the same time, like maybe it's a mom taking both of her kids at the same time, I know that some of these discussions kind of like are half heard. And mm-hmm. I really just want to make sure that people hear that, yes, this is good, because now your mom probably is going to say, no, you can't do that because right. things have changed since then. So then you got to go home and you're like, okay, do I listen to my mom? What do I do? Do I call the doctor about this? Let me not call the doctor. I'm going to save it for their earache for next week. So it's right. so important that they have avenues like this, even in a podcast, to be like, it's cool, relax. You're going to be okay. You could give them, mm-hmm. you know, a sweet potato and a carrot in the same day. Nobody's going to explode. Everybody's going to be fine. It's more important. Right. So what I'm hearing is it's more important the consistency than the food. So we're going with texture and we're going with squishable versus let's start with bananas.
Correct. Yeah. And I think having that sort of like squish test guideline, mm-hmm. it opens up so many foods.
Oh yeah.
You know, it really does. And then, you know, on the opposite end of stream, they can do things, you know, like a mango pit, that's sort of hard foods that where a piece can't break off. Those are really good for oral development too. So you can bring those in. But yeah, it really doesn't have to be like day one is banana, day two is sweet potato, day three is broccoli, whatever. Mm-hmm. You just, you don't have to, I think that would just make it so much more much more complicated than it needs to be.
It does. But then wearing your, you know, your personal chef hat, it makes it so much easier if you're like, okay, this is what I'm cooking. How am I going to cook this differently so that right. they could have dinner with us? Plus there's right. gotta be research on just a family meal in general. And the benefits of that and eating socially and sitting down together. When did you start eating yourself when they were eating, since now they were feeding themselves? When did, or maybe you didn't, or maybe you've been doing this ever since, but do you have family meals? And how does that play a role in just life in general? Can we do that?
Yeah. And there is so much research on the benefits of family meals at all ages. And like the sooner you can start that and make that part of your family values, the better. And we're losing that as a society because kids are in so many extracurricular activities and parents are working late. And we are losing that sort of like core that is so valuable to kids growing up and like having a relationship with their parents and all of that. So, I mean, one thing I love about baby-led weaning is you can start that literally from the first meal, because mm-hmm. if you're spoon feeding a baby, you can't really very easily be feeding, especially twins. Oh my gosh. Like you can't be eating yourself and, you know, in an attentive way, be spoon feeding two babies. So you can't, you know, you've tried, absolutely. You've done it. So if you're eating at the same time, not only does it free up more time because you don't have to eat, you know, after you've fed them, but you're integrating them into that family meal right from the get-go. And babies are wired to watch us. They copy everything we do. That's how they learn. So it's so valuable for a baby to see you eating the food. And then they know, okay, mom's eating cauliflower. It must be safe. There's like primal imprinting there mm-hmm. from back in the caveman days, where like babies would look to see what their parents were eating to know whether it was safe or unsafe, you know? So there's like deep stuff where we're primed to do this, of them watching us eat. And you can do that right from the beginning. And I think the one challenge is sleep is so important when they're babies, that sometimes like getting the family dinner to happen early enough before the babies need to go to bed can be challenging. But the sooner you can get to family meals, whether that's lunch on a weekend or moving your dinner earlier if you can. It doesn't always work perfectly, but to always be thinking of like, when's a time where we can eat together, and making that happen as often as you can without like driving yourself crazy with your schedule. And as they get older, that becomes easier. Like now we eat all our meals together now that they're toddlers, whereas it was sort of like a process getting there from when they were babies.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. I think that people underestimate that it could be any meal. So it really could be literally any meal. If you ate breakfast together every day, that counts. If you had, it's just spending time together, where I think not only is it, of course, beneficial for the babies and them watching you, but it's also just a great habit to get into. So it's just so good to be able to connect with your partner, with your kiddos. And as they get older, it's just normal. That's just what you do. It's just part of life. But it was always very rare. I'm still a big fan of family meals if and when that could happen. I mean, even like you said, with today's day and age, it's few and far between. But I absolutely love having dinner with all of us. And it always ends up a little chaotic. And then sometimes we like to invite other people into our family dinners. But I remember that when the kids were growing up, we always had dinner at like 5:30. And this is just what we did. And truthfully, I'm going to say, honestly, Hristine, it was probably more for me, because then I knew that I could be done by 7:30. When they went down for 8 o'clock, I was totally done. I didn't have to do anything else. But whenever their friends would come over and they would join us for dinner, it was always like a special occasion. And that's when I started to realize that like people really are not doing this. But if you get into the habit of it, when your kiddos are really tiny, you're going to be sitting there at the table with them anyway. So you could keep an eye on them and you could enjoy. And so you're maximizing your eating time. They're learning. It's a social thing. It's just a win-win-win-win-win-win-win. Like I can't actually see a loss. And there were days even that I will dare say that my husband didn't get to eat dinner with us. But I wasn't going to play, I'm going to wait for you to get home till 8 o'clock. We're having family dinner. Unfortunately, he's just not going to be able to be there. So it's really, you could still modify a family meal. A family meal doesn't have to be every member of the place that you live. It's having that, this is what we do. This is what our family does. It's such a great habit to get into. It's one of the reasons why I'm most excited about baby-led weaning, is because I think it takes that time back from the parents where you're so like on guard and you're overly neurotic about, you know, introducing little things. And I got a spoon feed. And I remember there was this one twin product. I'm not even kidding you. Somebody came out with a spoon that was a single handle with a double spoon end.
Oh my gosh. Where do you even start on how wrong that is?
I don't even know. we get pitched some of the weirdest products. I can't even begin to tell you. That was it though. I apologize for if you're listening to this now and that was you as the inventor. I can't remember your name, but I was just like, that's going to be a no for me, dog. I appreciate it, but we're going to take a hard pass on helping you with that product. Wow. That's not going to be very beneficial, but no more spoons. We don't need to worry about it. We could just go to plates. I'm also just throwing out another company, Ahimsa. I don't know if you've heard of them, but another twin mom that is at the helm of that company, and it's all stainless steel products that will be the same plate that's going to be from 6 months through their 35th birthday. It is going to last you. And believe it or not, I actually use one of their little bowls to hold up my microphone. So
I have seen that product. Yeah.
They're always top of mind for me because they're the perfect height. It also usually houses pistachios in the Twiniversity office. Yeah. So I do have to wash that today and I need to refill. But Hristine, I'm so thankful that you took the time today. And I know that you have a complete course at the Real Food Littles. It's realfoodlittles.com. So we could go on over there. And you also have like a really like very chock full of blog with quite a few things for us to digest too during the time that we're figuring this out. But when do you recommend that parents take the course? Do you think that it's like dumb to take it during pregnancy or should we get a jump on it? And how long do we have access to it? Because now I want to ask you everything about this.
Yeah. So you can absolutely take it during pregnancy, but just having been through this. I think there's so much in the early days of just mm-hmm. trying to get the breastfeeding bottle milk situation going with twins
yeah.
that I think solids feel very far away at that point. So I would focus on getting the breastfeeding milk situation, whatever path you choose, I would mm-hmm. focus on that first. And then the most ideal time to take the course would be sort of between like 4 and 5 months, like 3 to 5 months or so. But then I have a lot of people that join the course like right at 6 months or even between like 8 to 10 months, where they mm-hmm. may have started on some purees and are now trying to make the transition to finger food. So my course is really a transition to finger food course. I call it a baby led weaning course because that's what everyone is like familiar with. But mm-hmm. I never want somebody to feel like, oh, my baby's like 7 months and I started with purees, so this isn't going to benefit me. It's like quite the opposite. So the later you introduce finger food, the shorter time window you have before the 1 year mark for them to need to be up to speed. So, you know, if somebody does start with purees, like absolutely the course would benefit them down the road for sure.
Well, I genuinely thank you. And guys, you could just go to Real Food Littles. I'm going to put everything in the show notes. So don't get nervous. You don't have to write anything down now. It'll all be there from whenever you stop driving or food shopping or whenever you're listening to us. But if you have any questions for Christina or I, you could email them to her on her site, or you, of course, you could always email them to us at community@twiniversity.com, and we will get them to her ASAP. But I love that she's put this together. And of course, we definitely were favorites of twin families, right? So she's got all of this done for you. Just head on over. You could take a look at everything. And I know that you should, because I just think that it's going to make your life easier. You might feel that baby-led weaning might be a little bit more stressful in the beginning, but ultimately, big picture, I think it's just a real breath of fresh air. So thank you so, so much, Christina, for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Natalie. Thanks so much for having me.
You got it. And for you guys, if you need anything else, just drop us a slide into our DMs. We're just Twiniversity literally everywhere, because we are not very creative. So that's what we are. Or you could email us, like I said. And if you have a second and you're like, what can I do? They help me so much. Please review this podcast, blah, 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 like and subscribe, all that stuff that the kids say on the YouTubes. But genuinely, the more that you guys give us a little thumbs up, the more families that know that we exist and the more families that ultimately we could help. So until next time, guys, see you later, alligators.